A poem is like magic, and it's literally like a sleight of hand.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Are you spending too much money on ads? Want to increase your average order value? Are you eyeing that big exit from your business? Or have you been wondering how you can increase your lifetime value, build a community, and basically make more money through customer loyalty and retention? Let us help. Huckleberry Consulting brings over a decade of experience in client and customer success from the world's biggest companies. Let your customers tell you what they want. Visit consulthuckleberry.com to claim your free audit and quit leaving money on the table. Once again, that's consulthuckleberry.com. See you there.
Hey guys, good morning and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. I am super excited for this episode today because I decided to talk about something that's really, really close to my heart. And this is actually a hobby of mine that I've had for a very long time. To be honest, I think this might be the oldest hobby I have because I started to like this poetry. Basically, I'm just going to reveal it. Today, I'm going to talk about poetry, and I've loved poetry for a very long time. Ever since I was a kid, I was exposed to it. I started to really enjoy it, and I continued to love it. And then as I grew older, I also realized how much it has helped me in business. So you might be curious about that. And this podcast is all about things that are interesting to a business owner, but sometimes we don't really see the connections until they're in front of us. And so I think, though, as with every form of art, I do believe that it ultimately helps you as a founder and you as a business owner, because I think that any exercise in creativity, any practice that requires original ideas and seeing something from different perspectives definitely help a founder or a business owner in their thinking process, their decision-making process, and basically expanding one's horizon from looking at something from different perspectives. And so it's the same thing. If I was a painter and I painted something, I have to plan in that painting, where does the light come from? How am I going to put the shadows in this picture? And so if the light comes from left or right or above, the painting is going to look very different according to that, right? And so for me, any exercise in creativity, any indulgence in art is always good and beneficial to a business owner. So today we are going to talk about poetry. And honestly, this is such a treat for me because I love poetry and I love talking about poetry. And I actually got my first experience when I was a kid. My dad told me about this poem. I wish I memorized the whole poem, but I think I still have in my head some parts of it. But the title of the poem was A Boy's Dream. And it was about this boy, and he was just telling, I think, his father what he wants to be when he grows up. And I think it started like, when I grow up, I would like to be a brave, strong rover out at sea, a sailing on the ocean tide, to see the big world far and wide. And then I also like to something, build bridges and things like that. So it was like this boy telling his dream to his dad. And then the last lines of the poem was something like, I'll just do the best I can when I become a full-grown man. So it was very wholesome and it was nice. And when I was a kid, I loved that poem because it was just it had a nice rhythm to it. You know, it had the classic practice of a poem where the last words rhyme and had a nice rhythm to it. And I memorized it, and it was fun for me to memorize it. And when you memorize something that rhymes or has a nice rhythm to it, it makes it easier for you to memorize something. So, for me, to be honest, it was a form of affordable entertainment because if I see a poem at a newspaper, at a magazine, or something, or if I hear it, read about it somewhere, for me, I'm entertained. And I remember when I was a kid, when I would go to family reunions, our aunts and uncles will always make us perform something. And I was too shy to sing or dance or perform a magic trick. Like, I cannot do that. And so I also discovered that poetry was the best way for me to just deliver something that was entertaining. And so I think I memorized a few poems when I was younger. I think I memorized like a Pablo Neruda poem and, Edgar Allan Poe or something like that, and maybe a Shakespeare one. I forgot, but I think I did. And as I grew older, I wrote poetry and short fiction, fast fiction when I was in school. And I realized because I was kind of in my preteen age, I mostly wrote about like love. And I think because my early exposure to poetry and fiction was like Shakespeare and Edgar Allan Poe, as I mentioned, and they wrote about love a lot. And maybe that is why I became such a romantic. But I do try to do something different every now and then. Like, I literally make an effort, but I will not deny that if I write something that is related to love or relationships, for me personally, it's still easier. So as I grew older, I tried to write about other facets or other angles of life, other thoughts. And my process is usually I would be obsessed with an idea and I would go off of one line. And then I would build a poem from one line or one idea. And it's almost like a seed. And then now it would grow a stem or a twig, a branch, and then it turns into a tree, and maybe we'll have some flowers. That's what I think of a poem. But my best idea or the best description that I have of poetry is actually from this professor that I had in college, and his name was Pagusara. I forgot his first name, but he's from the Philippines. He's an award-winning poet, and he told us that a poem is like magic, and it's literally like a sleight of hand. So, like, if you think about the magician, and they want you to think this is one thing, but this is actually something else, right? Or they try to distract you about this one thing, and then boom, like something bigger happens. And I really appreciated that. And from that moment on, I was able to fully understand what poetry was for me. And poetry for me is a surprise waiting around the corner, and it's hidden inside the words that you already see. And so, if I think of a body of text like that, for me, that's so fascinating and that's so exciting. And there's a surprise around the corner always. It's like a tin. I was going to say Tinder. It's like a Kinder Joy. It's like a Kinder Joy that, you know, there's a something inside. There's a surprise. That's what I think of poetry. And I really, really like that. So every now and then, I even use that description in copywriting. And later on, I'm going to talk about also how poetry has helped me in business, but you know, we can wait a little bit for that. Right now, I just want to have this conversation with you and this one-way conversation with you. And I want to tell you all these ideas I have. But if someone asks me how or who were my other influences in poetry, I would say Charles Bukowski was a huge influence as well. Wisława Szymborska. I think she's a Polish writer. I don't know if I am even saying her name right. And also, when performance poetry, slam poetry came on, I loved the works of Rachel McKibbins, Sarah Kay, Phil Kay. They're not related, by the way, but they're friends. And a lot of other poets, from local poets in the Philippines. I personally like the work of Edith Tiempo, and I like the work of Alfonso Manalastas as well. And I love having these different sets of influences, and I do try to explore different topics as well. Andrea Gibson, Megan Fally, this powerhouse poetry couple is super awesome. And aside from poetry, some of these writers also indulge in like fast fiction or creative nonfiction, and I also enjoy that. And so creative nonfiction is basically essays, but they're written like more creatively, so they're most of the time also poetic, and so it also has that magician, that sleight of hand kind of effect for me. So I really enjoy that. So fast fiction, I think, is any piece of fiction that's under 1500 words. I think that's a technical definition, but feel free to correct me on that. But I do enjoy that as well. I love works of David Sedaris and some of the other essayists that are. Even BJ Novak, I love his work. BJ Novak's fast fiction is really, really good. For me, one of the best. And so those are my influences. But over the years, I've also made sure that I improved my skill in poetry. I attend a lot of workshops. I try to change my style every now and then. Sometimes these workshops will really force you to try something else, because the thing with a lot of artists is that we get stuck with one thing, with one style, and then we don't expand beyond that. And I get it. It's really easy to stay in one style, one topic, and maybe one color palette if you're a painter, but you have to really expand your experiences for you to have fresher ideas and fresh inspiration. And so I'm going to actually read you the earliest piece of poetry that is published online that was written by me. And so I just wanted to show you guys what I used to write or how I used to write. It's not that good, so I'm a little embarrassed, but who cares? But I dug up online and I found this poem, and I wrote this in 2000, between 2007 and 2008. So that's a very long time ago for me. And I actually remember when I wrote this poem. And so the title of this poem is Sitting Beside Handsome. And I remember I had this emceeing gig, and my co-host is a handsome guy. And I'm not saying like I have a crush on him. I actually don't, but he is a handsome in such a way that he was actually like a TV host. Like he was a you know he was like handsome, like objectively. And then I imagine I don't like him a certain way, but I imagine, what if I was a girl who had a crush on him, right? And so this is what I think would be going in my head if I was. And so sometimes for me, the fun thing about poetry is also like asking myself, what if I'm in that person's shoes? And then I try to write from that person's perspective. And for me, this is a really good exercise, because for a moment, I get to live someone else's life, and I get to really feel, close my eyes and feel what that's like. I don't know about you guys, but for me, that's entertaining. Is that schizophrenia or something? I don't know. Probably not. But okay. So let me read you this oldest poem that I could find. I'm sure I've written other poems that are older, but I honestly couldn't find them. And so here, sitting beside handsome is an intricate art. A bouquet of anxiety grows on your skin, so abruptly, but yet so daintily, as if it has happened before. A familiar feeling, yes, like opening your first gift from Santa or taking the first strides of your preschool graduation march. You check your hair, the oil on your face, and how your feet look in those girly slippers. All of these done with extreme subtlety. Your vocabulary shrinks to one tenth. So you mutter words which do not sound like words, so he wouldn't get the impression that you want to talk to him so badly. And then it's an emotional tug of war, to talk or not to talk, to talk or not to talk. Surprisingly, his opinion matters now. You realize this, and your heart pounds on your chest, your mouth experiences drought, and your pupils bloom. But you like it. It's a fair imitation of midday magic. It was just an ordinary day, powdered with good luck, embroidered with bliss. And he has no idea. No. Okay, that was the poem. So when I was writing this poem, I just remembered I was actually imagining that I was just a girl sitting beside a handsome stranger. I just remembered now. But this the experience inspired me, the experience that inspired me was talking to that co-host of mine who was objectively handsome. I was just thinking, what if I was a girl who sat beside this guy at a bus or something like that? Because for me, the experience was about a girl having all of these things happening in her body and her mind. It's like a war inside her body, and he has no idea. So that was it. It sounds so cutesy to me. It sounds a little immature or something. But for me, it also sounds familiar. I think that some girls have experienced this before or could relate to it. I hope that the girls listening can relate to it, because that's what I want to do with my poetry. And so what I try to do is that to improve my skill, or at least to try something new, I would go to a workshop. I go to workshops that are facilitated by different poets, from different types of exposure. Like, I went to workshops by a performance poet, slam poet. And the way that he taught is a very particular way of delivering poetry. And also, I might say, if you're writing poetry for the paper or if it's meant to be read, it's different if you're writing poetry that's meant to be performed or said out loud. And so those are two different things, two different approaches. So I tried that. I tried workshops which are pure writing, and the coach would teach us about different ways to look at something, how to really bring out the words that have very, very good visuals, how to evoke emotion properly, how to expand your vocabulary, and how to keep your metaphors consistent, you know? So one of my coaches, Megan Fally, she was a teacher in one of these workshops, and she was the coach in that workshop. She mentioned the perspective of the world of the poem, which is you have to have a theme going in the whole poem. And so actually, if I look at this the poem that I just read to you, where I talked about sitting beside a handsome guy, there were some repetitive metaphors, which is a bouquet of anxiety, and then your pupils bloom. It seems like it's like flower, it's like a flower opening. And looking back, obviously I didn't know about this strategy, but looking back, maybe that was what I was trying to do. And so there are also other workshops that go for quantity. So a lot of writers find it hard to continue writing and to continue producing good art at a specific standard. And so I had a drought one time. I think there was 5 straight years I didn't write anything. And this year I don't think I've ever written a piece this year. I probably should write one. It's November and I haven't written a piece. But I think that there was one workshop where it was 4 weeks and every week we were supposed to write a piece. And that was good for me because it made me believe in myself again. It made me just confront what I was afraid of. You know, every artist has this fear of what if they don't like what I created? And then now the world rejected me, right? And it's very hard for an artist to when they feel like that because they feel like nobody wants their art, nobody wants them, nobody wants their thoughts, nobody wants their perspective. And so it's very tricky. But you know, thankfully I'm doing art for myself and for my own enjoyment. And my livelihood doesn't depend on it. But if my livelihood depended on my art, whether I was a musician or a painter or something else that was related to art, honestly, I don't know if I will do very well because even though I'm a good salesperson right now, it is because I am selling something that is not indicative of my self-worth. And I'm not saying that your art is indicative of your self-worth, but there is a tendency for a lot of artists to think that way. And so, so those are the reasons why I joined those workshops. There would be a different intention per workshop, and I always leave the workshop with something in my hand, whether it's a poem, a fresh perspective, a new strategy. Usually it's actually a poem because the good thing about these workshops is they really, really encourage you to write. And I think I only attend, now that I look back at it, I think I only attend writing workshops anyway, where you're really, really supposed to write. Sometimes there was even one we were supposed to write during the class. Like the class was an hour. There was like a 30-minute lecture, 15-minute poem creation time, and then people would share their work or you know, once in a while they would pick a different person each week or something like that. So that was intense. I remember that time. I remember the time I did this workshop and I was really pressured to do it, and my work was not the best, but I did it. And just finishing a piece of art is already a good feeling in itself. And so, some of the poems that I created over the years have been about different topics. But I will talk about some of those that really stood out to me. And so, during the pandemic, there was, I felt depressed. I felt sad. I felt depressed. And I believe that there was also kind of a general feeling of depression around the world and of separation. And I was writing this poem actually when I was in an airplane, and I just kind of got tired of everything that I had to do just to travel, just to see the people I love. And so I wrote this poem. It's entitled 6 Degrees of Separation. And it talked about that idea in the past that they said that we are only 6 people apart from connecting to one another. That even from the other side of the world, someone will have a cousin who works with your husband's uncle who used to play poker with your X or something like that, but we would have like 6 degrees of separation or like connection, and everyone basically knew each other. And at that time, this idea felt comforting, and the world felt small and cozy and approachable. And then during the pandemic, I felt like the 6 degrees of separation. I felt the 6 degrees of separation, even from people that are beside me. And I remember having to wear a mask, having to wear a face shield when I visited the Philippines, having to be 9 feet apart, 6 feet apart from each other, these acrylic like doors in between us. And I felt that there were 6 degrees of separation from the people that we knew. And so I wrote about that. And And for me, that was a good feeling to really express how I felt in that moment. And if you want to read that poem, send me a message. Or you can find it on my Facebook because I now started to publish my poetry on my Facebook account, Carla Stefan Singson, or you can message me on Instagram and I'll send it to you. And so the other way for me to really enjoy poetry is because it's a form of therapy. It's a form of expression, and for me, it was a way to challenge myself to say the most in the least amount of words. We'll talk more about that later. But I told you that poetry is a way for me to kind of not just validate but process my emotions. And it has really, really helped me. And when people started to read my poetry that was kind of on the sadder realm, like that 6 degrees of separation, I realized that it also helped other people. It also helped put words into what they were feeling. And more, a lot of people reached out to me and complimented my work, but also it helped them feel seen and validated in what they were feeling. And that was a good feeling for me. For me, that was a feeling of like, wow, I feel like I did something nice, even though I really didn't, even though my intention was just to express myself. And so, speaking of expressing oneself and using poetry as therapy, there's another poem that I'm really proud about, which was very hard for me to write, but also I felt at that time was necessary. So my mom passed away in 2018, and it was very hard for me to get over her passing. And I feel like even also when my dad passed away, I feel like I took years for it to really sink in, you know, because like life happens and there's bills to pay and life goes on. And it was really hard for me to put into words how I felt about the loss of my mom because she was like my last parent, right? So my dad passed away a while ago and then my mom passed away. And I felt lost. I felt it was so hard for me to describe what I was feeling. Until finally it came to me. Finally, I found the right words to describe how that felt. And I'm going to read this to you guys actually, because you might have lost someone that's close to you, and maybe this will help, you know, or at least it will maybe you will find pieces of how you feel inside this poem. But someone asked me how I felt, and then finally I had an answer for them. And the answer was this poem. But I wrote this poem obviously in a better way than when I answered my friend. And so the title of this poem is The Tornado. After almost over a year, a friend asked me how I was. I said I was still mourning the loss of my mother. And this friend, we never talked for a while. So I tried to describe to her how it felt, bearing in mind the economy of language and the preciousness of time. So I said, recovering from the loss of my mother was like hiding under the basement during a tornado. You know it's coming, and you keep your hands over your ears, and you wait for it to pass, and you wish it would be over. But it's never over soon enough. And after everything, you get back up, you touch your body to confirm that you're still alive, and then you go out and realize that you just lost your home. So that was the poem. And I remember when I was telling my friend this, she was just like stunned. She was just so stunned. She just stared at me. And I think I mentioned in the poem that this girl, this friend of mine, we don't really talk a lot, but we were good friends. But we were just one of those friends that don't, you know, text all the time. And she was like, wow, that's really that's intense. And then I said, yeah, it is pretty intense. But in that moment, actually, what I felt was gratitude that I finally found the words. And that is one of the things that I like about poetry, because sometimes we have certain feelings that we can't identify properly, we can't process properly. And I feel like I am rummaging through a drawer of emotions. And then when I find the thing, when I find the word or the metaphor that makes sense, that describes exactly how I feel, it's a really good feeling because knowing is always better than not knowing. And I think poetry has helped me a lot. It has been like therapy for me because having this utility or this Swiss knife in my hand, which is just words, right? Words strung together, was really, really useful. And it has helped me a lot in my life. And so I think that is also another, if you need another reason to explore poetry, hopefully that will convince you. So those are pretty sad experiences, right? So let's talk about something positive again. So I got married last year, 2023, and I had a civil wedding that was very private, and then I also had a wedding by the beach. And that wedding by the beach, our families, my husband and I, our families attended. Unfortunately, not everyone from my side was able to attend because of the visa situation. But in my wedding, I decided to read this poem that I actually, the first poem that I wrote, not for my husband, but because of an experience that I had with him. And the title of this poem is Bulalo, which, if you're Filipino, you know that this dish is very famous, and it is a soup made out of beef and beef shanks and bone marrow. And it's really, really good, especially if it's raining. But I remember the first few times my husband, he was my boyfriend at that time, would come over to my house, and then I make him try Filipino food because he has never tried it. And Bulalo was one of them. And the poem is all about the nervousness of a new relationship and how it's just like cooking a dish for the first time. I liken that to the nervousness of starting a new relationship and the fear of thinking if I measured everything correctly, did I boil it at the right time? Everything has to really be perfect. Did I bring out my best cutlery? So I liken that anxiety and that pressure for it to be perfect, just like the pressure of entering a new relationship and all of these crazy things that we go and experience, just like when you recently start dating someone, you go to his social media and you try to see if their ex is prettier than you or something like that. And so I was telling this story in the poem, and it's, I would say, very cutesy, and it's very positive, but also I really wanted to communicate that feeling. It's a positive feeling. It's like that feeling of, when you cook something for someone and you're looking at their eyes or their face and you're waiting for that reaction, and you have all this anticipation, and it's definitely something positive, but it's also a lot of pressure. And so I talked about that. So if you want to read that poem, you can also message me or find it on my Facebook, and I hope that you like it, and I hope that you enjoyed it. I read that poem at my wedding, and it was for me, it was such a treat because it was very sentimental, and it was like the early parts of our relationship, which is still very, very cute because it was just all crushes, right? It was all this promise of a new thing, and everything has to be perfect, just like cooking a dish for the first time. So how poetry has helped me in general is that I would say it has helped me appreciate life more. It has helped me develop a different set of perspectives about something. And it has also helped me find the beauty in the smallest things. And so I remember in one of the workshops, we were tasked to just pick up a thing or and at this, oh, there was, I remember now, there was like there were some pieces of paper and we were gonna draw, we were gonna pick something. And inside that piece of paper, it was something written in it, and it was a regular thing, just an everyday thing. Oh, I remember this now. And what I picked was, it said grocery list. And we were supposed to write a poem out of that basic thing. So some people got like a tire or a light bulb or a computer, but it was just like very, very basic everyday things. And the challenge was to write something, write an experience. It's up to you what your angle is, what you want. And so I remember for that workshop, I picked grocery list. And I wrote a poem about a newly divorced woman doing groceries for the first time, and that she is only shopping for herself, that she's not shopping for her husband anymore. And she was just going through her grocery list and going through her feelings of sadness and loneliness and remembering these things, these experiences in her marriage, as she is going through the grocery list. And so I remember that was also a timed workshop. So I had to write the poem like under 10 minutes or something like that. It wasn't very good, actually. I remember the poem. It wasn't very good, but I think that if I revisit the poem, I don't even know where it is now, and I improve it, I think that I could make it better. So if you look at that workshop, what it forces you to do is that you have to have a different perspective or try to inject something unique in the experience. And there's always something unique in the mundane, right? And so I think that that is one of the things that poetry has really, really helped me. So, on to the next question, which is one of my followers asked me when I posted that I'm going to write about poetry or I'm going to have a podcast episode about poetry is that, did I ever make money in poetry? So, absolutely yes. So, technically, I did get paid to write poetry. There were times I did. When I was a writer at an ad agency, I would have a task which is like write a slogan for this one or write something for this brochure, and they would always expect something poetic, something that's punchy. Those are the words that they loved using in an ad agency. And then so I use poetry for that. There was also a time when someone asked me to write his wedding vows for $60 or something like that. It was so funny. And I did it. I said, sure, I'm down for a challenge. And I asked him a few questions about his wife and what he liked about his wife. And basically I asked him some prompts or something. And then I wrote his wedding vows. I hope his wife never gets to find out that it was me. No, but it was him. It was him. I just helped him find the right words, right? And so I was just a curator, basically. I'm not the speaker. I'm not really the feelings are not coming from me. I just helped him out pick the right words for it. So basically, I'm just an interior designer picking out furniture. So I would liken that to that experience. And the other ways I made money through poetry is I was invited to perform before in the past. I would perform at weddings or I would perform at certain events, and sometimes I wouldn't even perform an original. It's like they wanted me to perform someone else's poem, and it was fun. It was pretty fun. And then my best and my most favorite use of poetry is, of course, in communication. And so I love learning about words. I love being able to communicate properly, succinctly, and to be able to really drive my point across, you know. Sometimes we could be so verbose and we're trying to over explain, but I actually realized that Brevity is the best way to go about it. So, what was the quote? Brevity is the father of wisdom, or something like that. But I think that poetry, because of the economy of words, you have to really be mindful of how much you're saying, and you're really packing a lot of punch in the least amount of words. And I think that's my favorite feature of poetry. It is one of the most efficient types of communication, because when you're writing poetry, you every word deserves its space. Every word needs to fight for its space on the page. And this is why poetry is written usually in very short lines, like 5, 6, or maybe 8 line or 8 words per line, and then you go to the next idea. But there's so many emotions in one piece, or in one body of work. And I think that really helps, because I become a more efficient communicator through poetry, especially when I'm writing. It helped me with copywriting. Obviously, you guys know copywriting is one of the most lucrative careers in the creative world, because you can use your words to persuade people to buy. And if you know how to write and make people evoke, these emotions, or make them feel a certain way with the least amount of words, then they will buy. If you hit the right emotion that makes them want to ease their pain, if you know how to, my favorite line, if you know how to twist the knife properly. I have this quote, which was, I hope this had not been used by anyone, but I swear to God, I just thought of this. I used to tell my students, my copywriting students, that copywriting is twisting the knife and then calling 911. So basically, it's like you have to hurt, I'm sorry for this term, you have to hurt the person, and then you have to have the solution for it. And then it has to feel like a life or death situation. So copywriting is twisting the knife and then calling 911. That is why I have that expression. And I hope that doesn't make me sound very violent. It's just all this true crime shows that I watch. But I think that my training in poetry has definitely been very beneficial. So if you are a copywriter, or if you're thinking about improving copywriting, going to a poetry class is one of the most underrated strategies that you can have. You will learn so much. You will be forced to be smarter with your words. You will be forced to understand that each word needs to fight for its space. And I think it's the same thing with business. When I post content, I try to think, is this honoring the time of my reader, of my audience? Is this worth their 2, 10, 5 seconds? Is this entertaining, inspiring, or educating? And so I have a, I, you know, obviously this could be a longer rant or anything, but sometimes a lot of business owners who create content and who use content to attract customers, a lot of them don't think if the piece of content that they produce is worthy of the time of their consumer. So I want you to respect your customer enough to know that and understand that. And I hope that you use that principle when you're creating content. And so, I think that is it for our discussion about poetry. I want to really say my piece and encourage more people to read poems. And if you have a favorite poem, I would love to read it. Please send it to me, because I love reading and discovering new writers, new poets. And I also love to see what your taste looks like, right? And I every piece of art that we like speaks something about us. And so I want to end this podcast episode by reading you one of my favorite poems. I actually have this. I'm reading it so that I can make sure that I have every word right. But I actually memorized this poem in my head. I'm just not 100% sure if every word is correct in my head. So this is a poem by Sarah Kay. She is a very famous performance poet, slam poet. She's award-winning. She's also a world-traveling poet. She has facilitated poetry workshops all over the world and was very, very lucky to attend one of her workshops when she visited the Philippines. And so this poem, I love this poem because it's also hashtag so cutesy and very demure. And it is such a good vibes poem, and it's really easy to digest. It's really easy to appreciate. And honestly, if I am at a dinner table and someone asks me to recite a poem, this is a crowd pleaser for sure. And so this poem is called Love Letter from Toothbrush to Bicycle Tire. And it is the personification of a toothbrush who has fallen in love with a bicycle tire. And that's what the poem is about. Okay. Love letter from toothbrush to bicycle tire. They told me that I was meant for the cleaner life, that you would drag me through the mud. They said that you would tread all over me, that they could see right through you, that you were full of hot air, that I would always be chasing, always watching you disappear after sleeker models, that it would be a vicious cycle. But I know better. I know about your rough edges, and I have seen your perfect curves. I will fit into whatever spaces you let me. If loving you means getting dirty, bring on the grime. I will leave this porcelain home behind. I'm used to twice a day relationships, but with you, I'll take all the time. And I know we live in different worlds and we're always really busy. But in my dreams, you spin around me so fast, I always wake up dizzy. So maybe one day you'll grow tired of the road and roll on back to me. And when I blink my eyes into the morning, your smile will be the only thing I'll see. That was the poem. So if you Google that poem and you read it out loud, you're going to see that certain words really just deserve their space or deserve their place in the poem. And the personification was so beautiful to me that they added a lot of verbs and a lot of words that really pertain to the toothbrush and the bicycle tire, you know, like the toothbrush saying that you were full of hot air, right? Like a tire. And the toothbrush saying, I'm used to twice a day relationships because you brush your teeth twice a day. So I'm not going to explain the poem. Obviously, this is not a poetry class, but this is a perfect example of like a lot of pleasure from such a small moment of my life. Like, this is something I really enjoy. And I hope that you did too. I hope that you did too. And if you got this far, I hope that this podcast episode has encouraged you or inspired you to seek words that really speak to you. And I hope that, like me, you have that experience of if you're going through a lot of emotions and you're rummaging through this drawer of feelings, I hope you find the right words to put in these emotions. I hope that you are able to put your feelings into words and feel validated with how you feel, that someone else out there is feeling the exact same way as you do, and then they're telling you that. Or if not, if it's not as deep as that, if it's just similar to enjoying reading the love letter from toothbrush or bicycle tire, I hope that you find that little indulgence in your day to imagine, to use your imaginations in a certain way, and to kind of see this animated story in your head which was made possible by just very few words on a page. That's what poetry is. That's why I love it. And I hope that this podcast episode has encouraged you to explore loving it too. So if you see me around, if you see me in person, tell me about a poem that you like or send some to me. I would love, love, love to read it. Thank you so much and see you next week for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.